Ken Miller, Trent Condon. They are Miller and Condon on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
Hi, good morning, everybody, and welcome. It's Thursday here on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO, and everywhere for that matter. Miller and Condon with you for the next couple of hours. We will talk sports with you and localize it as best as we can, and we're going to have a pretty good run at that here today. Alex Halstead coming up, covers Iowa State for CycloneAlert.com, part of 24/7 Sports. A lot of Iowa State news, not just the game from the other night that was clearly disappointing, as they were unable to really prevent Baylor from doing what they wanted in the paint, so we'll talk to him about that. But Hilton apparently is on the precipice of getting approval for a $25 million dollar renovation that is going before the Board of Regents. We'll do that. The Cyclone Football Media had an opportunity to talk to Mel Kiper. We'll get Halstead's opinion on how that went. A lot of Iowa State conversation coming up here in about 20 minutes. Do some hockey this morning with Joe O'Donnell. The Wild have been gone and will be gone again for the next couple of weeks, essentially. They're home tonight. They're home tomorrow night as they try and squeeze in some home games between the state wrestling, then the state girls, and then the boys. The Wild are forced out on the road. Not at such a bad spot to be next week, as they're headed to California. It's a place they'd rather be. Not bad at all. So Joe O'Donnell in the first hour. We'll do some catch up on the Iowa Wild about 10:45.
And very disappointed, this hardcore Wild fan, as you know. Wearing my North Stars hat.
You are. They traded Charlie Coyle yesterday.
My guy. I like Charlie Coyle.
Nino Niederreiter was your other guy, and then you they gravitated to Coyle.
I knew like four guys, and two of them have been traded.
Well, let's see if they, you can maybe latch on to Parise, because he's a good player.
That's another one that I know.
As a fan of a team in the Central Division, it would be nice to get him out of that division. As a fan of a team in the Central Division that are circling the drain, I might add. But you don't care about that.
So are they trading away?
Yeah, they're selling.
They are.
Yeah, I think they're in sell mode.
Because they had one of the bigger payrolls, at least the last couple of years ago, I remember.
Probably
that.
So. Yeah. A lot of stuff. Well, they got two guys that are making a ton of money, and Ryan Suter and Zach Parise. So we'll talk some Wild, and we'll do some Minnesota Wild as well. For you hockey fans in the listening audience, both of you, you'll be glad to that we're going to talk a little puck. And we're going to talk more puck as the playoffs get closer for the Iowa Wild, as they do play here on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO. And I got to tip my cap to them, because when you've had an event, Trent, that's a local event with high school or whatever it has to be, the Wild are more than willing to, listen to maybe going to .com for a night. So,
yeah, and that was the case last Saturday with the state championships. Precisely. A big thank you to Joe and everybody with the Wild. And
Todd Fredrickson, the whole group. Yep. And so we will do a little payback. How about that? We'll help them as they have helped us, as we have a nice partnership working there. In the 11 o'clock hour, Wade Looking Bill on Iowa. We will take a look back at the Maryland game and a look ahead to tomorrow night. 8:10, I think I saw, was the official tip. But just to be safe, get over there at 8 o'clock, just because you don't want to miss anything. Indiana and Iowa play on a Friday night. Carver Hawkeye was packed. Yes, it was Michigan the last time we had a game on Friday. Be anxious to see just what kind of turnout they're able to put together in Iowa City tomorrow night. And then Big 12 conversation with Matt Postens, heartlandsports.com. So a lot on our plate as we keep it for the next couple of hours. And Trent, I guess we should start, and we will get Iowa and Iowa State, because you and I were off yesterday. And although it's, about 36 hours or so ago, I'm sure we both still have some opinions. I do want to hear your opinion on the total.
that did not go well.
No, look, I mean, everybody's, if you do this long enough, my Super Bowl was Jacksonville and Atlanta this year. None of those teams made the playoffs.
You get an egg on your face, right?
Yeah. That's what you're going to do. And you had some the other night, so I'll throw you the cloth that I used. But let's talk last night, North Carolina and Duke, and my, oh my, I've never seen that before. I've never seen a guy blow a tire. I really and truly have you?
I have. I've seen it happen before. I don't think at that level, though. And you look, and sometimes, oh yeah, it looks like the glue's coming undone on the heel, something like that. Nothing like that, though. Not in that kind of circumstance where he blew out the shoe.
Cutting on his left foot. His foot went, well, everybody's seen it, right through the side of his Nike. Now, I see Nike stock is down on paper, a paper loss this morning, over $1 billion.
Whoa.
In paper.
How does that work?
Well, the stock is down, and I guess there's so much Nike stock out there. If you were add the 1 point, whatever it is, loss. No, I don't claim to. This is I've got maybe I don't have one strong suit, but I certainly struggle when it comes to this.
For finances, we go to our buddy Mike Hammond.
Absolutely, and we're glad to do so. In fact, I've got my Mike Hammond appointment coming up here.
You do?
Not for finances, to see how much of my finances I'm going to have to turn over to the government.
Yes, yes.
But that's expected every year as we're contract employees, right? And that's what happens when April 15th rolls around. So anyways, it was just, I can understand why Duke kind of, I mean, the best player on their team was just helped off the floor.
He was,
you know,
the
their
face.
Leader was wounded.
Yeah. I mean, he was Paul McCartney. He's the face.
Yeah.
I mean, and the other guys are incredibly talented.
Well, he was the fifth highest rated in this class on his team.
Right.
He was five. And now he's clearly the face of college basketball, isn't he? I mean, who else would be?
Oh, it's him.
It's him for sure.
There's no doubt about it. And Reddish and Barrett
yeah.
Jones. They're all really good.
Uh-huh.
But Zion is something different. It's something that we really have never seen before.
And how will it work at the next level?
I think incredibly well.
Do you?
Yeah. I think he translates. Just, I mean, you look at the way, it's not just the dunking. As an offensive player, the way that he has developed, and that was the knock against him. That's why he wasn't the number one player in this class coming out, because people said, hey, he's a great athlete, and he's an incredible dunker, but how does it translate? And then you look at the numbers taking dunking away. He's been incredibly efficient this year.
Yeah.
He shot it decent.
No, he's been better than I thought.
Yeah, and that'll get better. I mean, when it's his full-time job.
Yep.
Zion is going to translate incredibly well. And in the way, in today's college and NBA, I think it's even better. If this was 15 years ago, might have been a little more difficult. You know, is he good enough to be a three? Man, maybe not. Can he guard a four? Maybe. Well, so many teams play small ball that it doesn't matter. He's going to be fine at the next level as long as health is okay. So what have you seen today about the knee injury?
Sprain. That it certainly could have been worse, I think, is the consensus. That seems to be the national media that covers college basketball. Could have been way worse. Of course, it's going to be a major talker. What's he going to do after this? Should he play again? Shouldn't he play again? Look, there's one person who's going to make that decision, and he's going to make the right decision for him.
Yeah.
It's Zion Williamson. You do what you want to do.
And I'm not going to sit here in a soapbox and kill a kid.
No. For whether he plays with. I'm the same way in bowl games.
Right.
I mean, if you're not in the playoff, I have no problem with you not missing your bowl game. I really and truly don't.
An exhibition that they aren't paid for. Now, there is a portion of people out there that believe that Zion Williamson gets nothing out of the Duke experience. Now, that's laughable.
It is laughable.
Because
I agree with you.
Without, if he is overplaying in Europe right now making money,
right,
we wouldn't be talking about Zion Williamson.
No.
The money that he's going to get, maybe not from Nike, maybe from Puma.
How about that? Did you see that tweet?
Yeah.
I thought, I kind of got a smile on my face, and I thought, you know what, this isn't going to end well, and I wonder how long it's going to be up.
Wasn't up very long. And for people that missed it yesterday said, what?
Something wouldn't happen if he wore our
shoes. If he was wearing Pumas.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
We're paraphrasing.
That. Right.
You know what we need to talk about, though, and the Zion Williamson is clearly the story. But the seniors for North Carolina. You know, we've got a bunch of freshmen on Duke, and they're amazingly talented. But look at the seniors, Johnson and May last night. The effort that they had, you know, physically, they're just, well, with the exception of Zion, who wasn't there last night. They are just more prepared at this. They're older, for crying out loud. May was unstoppable. 15?
Yeah.
That's amazing what he ended up with. Johnson the same way. I don't think he had a double-double, but he certainly had a bunch of points. And R.J. Barrett was great, and Reddish was terrific, and Jones was okay. He wasn't great. But both teams really struggled to shoot the basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, the three-point shooting in that game was just atrocious.
In a game that Carolina put 88 up on the board.
Right. And we're 2-for-20 from three. That's 10%.
That's
awful.
I didn't realize it ended up that 2-for-20.
They set a record. Both teams combined, and I'm going off memory, you know, memory is 3-for-34, I want to say, in the first half yesterday combined.
And it was 8-point game, 38-30 at the half?
42-32.
Yep. Regardless, 88 in a game like that, and a game that you mentioned those seniors, because Coby White was okay.
Yeah, he's. You know what? I'm glad you brought him up, because I remember telling you about him about a month ago. Have you seen this kid play? And you've seen him, but you don't know much about him. I've watched him, I don't know, four or five times this year. Last night wasn't his best game.
No.
But he's really good.
Yeah.
And when you got him on a bad night.
You got Trey Jones that's up there guarding
him. Yeah,
he can make it difficult.
Absolutely can. There's no doubt about it. So the building, Cameron Indoor last night, the ticket price to get in, other than the Super Bowl, the second most expensive get-in price.
So I'm hearing this conversation yesterday, and I don't get it. I know Obama was there. I know you got that. But it's a regular season. Okay, it's your only time to see Zion against Carolina and Cameron. But that kind of ticket price? Know.
It's bucket list. There were the broadcast was talking about a family flew all the way out from Seattle. Now, obviously, a family that's pretty well off.
Oh, yeah.
Brought four of them out there. They wanted to scratch something off their bucket list, and they all wanted to go together. I would love to go to Cameron Indoor Arena. It doesn't have to be North Carolina.
You're right.
I mean, I can't afford North Carolina. I don't know who on this home schedule, ACC-wise, that I could afford to see. But if most people want to at
least
Georgia
Tech's
a game,
coming to town.
There you go. Maybe that's a little bit more affordable.
Right.
Just to say you've seen it, right? Yes,
absolutely.
The star power was out in force last night to see that game. The ticket price is $2,700 for a get-in. That's crazy. For a regular season college basketball game.
Is there anything you would pay $2,700 to see?
Yes.
Oh, I think I know what it is.
And
Game 7?
Game 7, Winnipeg, downtown Winnipeg, Jets versus whoever in the Stanley Cup Final. And I will do it. I have no idea how I'm going to do it. I have no idea what I will tell my wife when she realizes that I've done it.
Oh, that conversation, I would love to be a fly on the wall for that one.
But I'm going.
Yeah.
Right?
You have to.
Absolutely. This has been my team since I was a child, for crying out loud. And I remind you, they left for 15 years. Now, I wasn't living there at the time, but still. Anyway, is there anything you would pay $2,700 to go see?
Probably a Hawkeye.
Hawkeye Final
National
Four.
National Championship. Yeah.
So Monday night, although you've got a press pass.
I do have a press pass.
How about that? You are credentialed legitimately.
Yes. No shaky business
none
here.
None whatsoever. Nope. You are legitimately credentialed to see that game, to see the weekend, right? You'll be there Saturday for both of them, then back again on Monday. That's outstanding for you. So if you didn't, you would pay, it would have to be the national championship, right?
And even $2,700 maybe for me is just too much.
A little steep, yeah.
Yeah. And now if, say it's $1,000, $1,000, and I can put it on my credit card and I'll pay it off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, national championship, but there's nothing professional sports-wise. I'm thinking Twins Game 7 Worlds.
Yeah, I don't think it costs that much.
Right, and that's the other part. Yeah, that a $2,700 ticket is just, it's unthinkable. I mean, $2,700, you might get to sit at center ice for $2,700 in Winnipeg.
No, I don't think
so. It's going to be pricey?
I think it's going to be pricey.
Okay.
Because it's the smallest building in the NHL.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So, I hope I get to find that out at some point. Not going to be this year. They're bad. So, speaking of bad, let's do Iowa State. Whoa, and I hate to segue like that, but they were both bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who was worse. it's seemingly every weekend you have to come back. Well, what was a better win? Well, Iowa State on the road at K-State the miraculous shot? Well, why do we have to do that? I never understood
It was bad for both of them.
It was bad for both of them on Tuesday night. I don't care where you want to start.
And in Cy-Hawk Twitter, do you get a little star if you make the argument your loss was worse than mine?
I guess.
You both lost.
Yeah, they both lost, Trent. That's the bottom line. There wasn't a lot of... Find the positive in the Iowa-Maryland loss. Help me out with that. It was close.
It was close. They did come back again.
Uh-huh.
And this is something that I was alluding to, and just bad work out of me. I couldn't verbalize it to you in Monday's show, but as we were talking about the game and the back-to-back miraculous victories for Iowa, if that maybe a false sense of security that we can come back for anything.
I thought they were going to come back on Tuesday, by the way.
I thought they did.
I thought Moss's shot was in.
I did too. Yeah. But you can't play that way. You can't continue to, we'll be fine. For 36 minutes against Northwestern, they were awful.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back and they got the victory. Mm-hmm. And for stretches against Rutgers, they were bad.
Mm-hmm.
But they got the miraculous shot in the bank in and they win it.
How about Rutgers last night? I thought they were going to beat Michigan State for a while anyways. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
And it leads down to the path of you don't have that sense of urgency. You don't have that aggressiveness throughout. They're good defensively. They played well, but it felt like for a while in that second half as the lead started to go up and then Cowan had hit a shot, I would get it back within six and Cowan had hit a shot, that they were just almost waiting. They're waiting, all right, well, when we get inside...
Somebody save us.
Right. When we get inside, we'll be fine.
Got them right where we want them.
Yeah. And that's not a good way to play. You can't afford to do that. You can't afford to do that when three of your last five now are on the road. You got Indiana, who's talented, a bad basketball team, but a talented team coming in tomorrow night.
I'm anxious to see how they show up because they left it all on the floor. It's a cliche, but they really did. You see much of Purdue, Indiana the other night? That was a hell of a game. Mm-hmm. That's a great in-state rivalry. That is a great rivalry in Big Ten
basketball. Yes. 218
absolutely is, and they didn't score a lot of points. And I kept looking at Twitter, and Twitter was, you know, not really digging the fact that it was low scoring. I was into it. It was a Big Ten physical basketball game. Right. All four. What's wrong with Luka Garza? He's averaging 4 points in his last four games. He was on the bench at the end of that game last night, not because of foul trouble. I don't think he had more than two in the game, and maybe only had one. So it wasn't foul trouble that kept him stapled to the bench. But Luka Garza has not been himself lately, Trent, and I just wonder what's going on there. And he even said as much, that he's out of sorts after the game. He was, you know what, good for all of these kids. You know, I'm glad Bohan is not holding back. He thought he was fouled and maybe not the best look after a loss like that. But you know what, at least you're saying something, and that's what we want, right?
That is what we want. Yeah, it's not cliches. It's not just, right. It's what the ref called.
Or it's not, or even worse, they're not going to be made available.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes. And we've seen that from
absolutely.
Time to time. Absolutely. But back to Garza, I think it's just a bad stretch. I don't see anything. Now, they are defending him a little bit different, and that's a part. You're seeing teams be more and more physical, not just more physical with him as he's in the post, but even before, when he's trying to set up, you're seeing guys push him away, get him off the block, and get him, and the way they're closing out. Another part that I've seen is I think coaches now have gone up and, guys, don't leave your feet. Against Garza, he's not going to beat you with a baby hook because he just outjumps you. Stand your feet. Don't fall for those pump fakes because athletically, with his limitations, you're going to be able to defend him a lot better. Stay on the floor. And I think more and more teams have done that.
Excellent point.
And the last two games, you played a couple of big, good teams with good front lines. That's been a big difference, too.
No doubt. Wieskamp had a really bad shooting night as well. I don't think he made a shot. He made it.
He was dealing with foul trouble.
He was. That's true. He was in foul trouble. In fact, when was he stapled to the bench in the first half? How many minutes in? Was it five? Four?
It
was early.
I didn't get the tweet out in time, but yeah.
No, it was early in the game, and he never played another minute in the first half and finished with 2 points. Iowa State, conversely, going up against Baylor, a game that most thought that they were 10-point favorites, 9.5.
Opened at 8.5 when it first came out the day before.
Right.
And quickly, by that evening, it was 10.5 across the board before he even laid your pillow down. So, and this is automatic, right? It's Baylor?
Sure seemed like it.
Baylor's going the wrong way. They're dealing with a bunch of injuries.
Had a score to settle because they got picked off in Waco when they were on the road. Shayok got his points, but boy, he was about the only one. Did Wigginton finish in double digits? If he didn't, he was close, I think.
He had 10,
so there you go. Trent, they were just killed inside. What was the offense? They gave up 18 offensive rebounds. 18! Offensive rebounds, out-rebounded 44-28. They got to get tougher. I agree with them. Too many guys standing around underneath the basket in that game. And this isn't the first time we've seen this. This is starting to become a trend with this Iowa State team, right? Just go ahead and sashay through the paint and lay it in. You know, it's almost like a layup line. Go back to the end of the K-State game when the game was here. Barry Brown just untouched, right through and
TCU.
In.
TCU. Everybody on the team all the way through.
So it's a flaw.
It is.
On this team.
Yes. This is something that you can point to and say, we talk matchups when it gets NCAA tournament time. The wrong matchup can have this team, even if they're a 4, 5, 6 seed, whatever it is, that double digit seed absolutely can pick this team off. Matchups are ultra important to Iowa State and them having a chance to make a run. You mentioned the 18 offensive rebounds on 38 misses. Almost half of the misses.
It's incredible.
Baylor came up with the offensive rebound. That can't happen.
No.
Did he get outworked by Scott Drew?
Give me an example.
Well, just not pushing button, not going two bigs together.
He just refuses to do that, Trent.
George Condon didn't see any run.
He's playing two guys off the bench. Did anybody else play? Did Tally get in? Yeah, he did. Tally played 5 minutes in the game. So he expanded. He went from 7 to 8.
A deep Iowa State team. That's what we talked about this summer. This is
your guy Lewis hasn't seen the floor won't.
No, absolutely not. This is as deep of an Iowa State team as Prohm has had, and he's going back to what he knows, and that is a tight bench. Is that the best thing?
Do they need a shakeup? And if that shakeup is, I mean, we've been not saying it. Well, we were, and then we kind of got off of it. The Wigginton, is it time to insert him in the starting lineup? And even if you do, what difference is it going to, make a big enough difference? I'm not sure that there's a right answer there. I'm really not.
At this point,
I think the answer is you've got it tough enough. You've got to want to rebound the basketball. You want to get your nose dirty underneath the hoop because elbows are flying. You have to want to be down there and do business down there. And if you don't, and sadly, I mean, look at Travis Hines been really good on Twitter, showing some of those. They're not vines anymore. What are they called? Clips, whatever it is. Just pointing out, just look at the guys just standing around letting Baylor go up uncontested time after time after time. Not a good look. Alex Halstead joins the program. More Iowa State conversation. Hockey in about 20 minutes or so. Wade Lookingbill on the Hawks, 11:15. Matt Poston's Big 12 overall. A lot of talk that this is the best conference in college basketball. They're good, but I'm not sure that they're the best conference in college basketball.
They don't have a national champion.
They do not, Trent, and I totally agree with you because that's how that to me is a big marker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ACC has a chance to have the national champion. So does the Big Ten have a chance to have the national championship. I think more so the ACC, but
yeah.
The SEC's got some good teams as well. But we'll talk Big 12 hoops with Matt Poston's Texas Tech, Kansas, primetime, Saturday night, 7 o'clock.
Wow. It's appointment television.
It's appointment television. Trent and I are here till noon on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXN. A
polar plunge.
This is Iowa State Athletics Director Jamie Pollard, and you're listening to Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
Let the good times roll. Let the lock you in ground.
Welcome back, Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO. Portion of the show brought to us by our friend, Dr. Stephen Fuller. Having lunch with Doc tomorrow. Best sausage sandwich in town.
Ooh.
I think it's the Norwoodville Grill Pub something. Norwoodville.
Where's my invite?
You're welcome to come.
Not too busy.
Are you? Well, there you go. but Doc Fuller's got a couple of locations. He's my dentist. A couple of locations. If you're new to the area or time to maybe change up on the dentist. 2822 East 29th Street in Des Moines, 410 8th Street Southwest in Altoona. Dr. Stephen Fuller, fullerdental.net for more information, the services, the locations, patient forms, etc. fullerdental.net. Let's talk some Cyclones. Alex Halstead, cyclonealert.com. Alex, Trent, and Ken, thanks for coming on. How are you?
I'm doing good. Waiting to go to Iowa State's basketball practice this afternoon before they go to TCU, but
nice.
Otherwise just starting to get ready on some 2020 recruiting stuff.
Good stuff. Well, you know what? I want to get to that, but I do want to your tweet from earlier. Just the renovations that apparently the Board of Regents have been asked to approve, $25 million, and it's mostly concourse stuff. Is that how I read this, Alex?
Yeah, so Iowa State, obviously, you know, last year went to the Board of Regents to get $90 million, or not to get $90 million, but to get approval to go forward with their $90 million project on the Academic Center and Jack Trice Stadium. Now they'll go to the Board of Regents here next week for $25 million, like you said, at Hilton Coliseum. And it is mostly kind of it's going to be the entrances to the north and south ends of Hilton Coliseum to make them more accessible for wheelchairs and things like that. But then a lot of it's going to be the concourse, to widen the concourse. And the big thing I think some fans are probably most excited about is they're going to change how the concessions work, and we'll be able to expand, supposedly, the offerings at the concession stands.
Good stuff there, and maybe opening up alcohol sales around. But that's something that
You've heard that?
No, I haven't. But it's coming. At some point, it's coming everywhere. We're getting there.
Yeah, I just saw some other big-name school just jumped aboard.
Rutgers.
There you go.
Rutgers, yeah. Big name, somewhat.
Well, yeah.
It is
Big
Rutgers.
Ten, I meant to
yes,
say.
Yes, yes. Well, Alex, let's get into the nuts and bolts of this basketball team. And after what you saw Tuesday night in the loss to Baylor, I know a lot of frustration out there right now in Cyclone fandom. People, how does this team continually lose these games at home? What's going on? Scott Drew gets prone again, going with the bigs and dominating inside. Your takeaway from Tuesday night?
Yeah, I think a lot of the meltdowns that happen on social media or elsewhere come from the fact that, you know, this Iowa State team has proven they can go win big games on the road. They've won at Texas Tech. They've won at Kansas State and even at Ole Miss. you know, which was a top 25 road game. I mean, they're able to go win some of these games on the road, and every time they've done that, they've put themselves back in the discussion for the Big 12 title, especially most recently against Kansas State. You know, we talked last week that going into that Kansas State game, if they win that game, they're back within a game. If they lost it, they were three out and probably done. Well, they won it, and fans are getting their hopes back up that Iowa State's in the Big 12 title race, and then they go back home, a place where, you know, in recent memory, they have not lost a lot of home games. You know, you look at Fred Hoiberg's last 4 years, the four tournament teams, he lost four conference games at Hilton Coliseum, and Iowa State lost three conference games this year. So I think that just feeds into the meltdown, so to speak, is they're in this race, and they're losing to teams that they're nearly double-digit figures, you know, favorites against.
And here comes Texas Tech to end the season. That's not going to be a picnic as well. You know, there's been a lot of criticism, Alex. I'm sure you've seen it. And a lot of Monday morning, or in this case, Wednesday morning quarterbacking, if you want to call it that, is, you know, when's Prohm going to, you know, come around and play two bigs at the same time? He's got to get Lardon Jacobson on the floor. He's got to get Condi. He's got to find some minutes for him. This isn't working. They were dominated inside. Look, Vital's not a big by any means, but boy, he's strong as a bull. Yeah. My God. And he was out fighting Horton Tucker for rebounds. Both of those guys getting the ball, hands on the ball at the same time, and it was going Vital's way, which, you know, that probably it's Horton Tucker's ball when he fills out a little bit, matures. But what do you think about that? Is there something to it? Should Prohm change things up and, you know, be willing to insert Jacobson, Lard, and Condit, two of them on the floor at the same time at points?
Well, I am surprised he hasn't gone to George Condit at times. You know, after some of these losses, I want to say TCU, Baylor, maybe back at the beginning of January where they lost to Baylor on the road, he's kind of been asked, you know, did you think about bringing Condit in for whether it's a rim protector against TCU where, you know, they were getting to the rim easy, or a rebound game like Saturday against Baylor. And both times he said, you know, he thought about it, and it didn't lead to anything. Obviously, we haven't seen Condit very much in conference play. He made a comment after the game, Tuesday night, and said, kind of, this team is what it is. And it makes me think he's probably going to stick to his guns of four guards. Now, I'm not saying there won't be a point where he puts two bigs out there, but I think this season's so late that I just don't know if he's going to do it at this point. I think it just kind of is what it is. But we have kind of seen some of the deficiencies of this team in the home losses. You know, the TCU game, I think, continued to show, along with the Kansas game on the road, some of their ball screen defense against some teams can be an issue, and that kind of goes back to the forward thing of, in the end, not having a rim protector there as the last line of defense. And then, Tuesday, giving up 18 offensive rebounds on 38 misses. You know, they rebounded at, 46% of their misses. Those are kind of the two big deficiencies, but you're so late in the season that you almost have to find ways to cover them up. Then, other than, you're not just going to fix those with 2 weeks to go, you know, completely solve them. You probably just got to find ways to win despite them.
Cyclone alerts. Alex Halstead joining us right now here. It's Miller and Condon on KXNO. All right, Alex, to the lineup. And we've talked about starting lineups and inserting different guys in there. But that aside, is it time for Wigginton to start to play 32, 34 minutes a game? Just overall, when you go through more minutes as opposed to Halliburton, Halliburton has scored, I think, double digits just once in the past, 14 games. I don't know, scoring is not his main thing. It's what he can do as a defender, what he does, obviously, passing the basketball. But would you like to see that number increase? I think Wigginton, over the last nine games, the most he's played is 27. If you're going with the seven-man rotation, does it make sense for Wigginton to get someone more of those minutes?
Yeah, I was saying that yesterday, that we're beyond the point of discussing whether he's going to start or should start or not. Like we said before, it might not even matter at this point. It's more about, is he playing starters minutes? And he's not right now. I mean, before Tuesday, he was averaging 24.5 minutes a game. Tuesday, he played 26 minutes. He's got to be in the probably 30 to 32 to be considered playing starters minutes. And part of the reason it's hard for him to play starters minutes is because he's not coming in until the 14 or 15 minute mark of each half, and that already takes 10 minutes off his line. And so that's probably, I think, the biggest gripe that I've seen a little bit recently is he's got to play more minutes, and maybe it's Halliburton, but maybe it's also Nick Weiber-Babb. I mean, Babb was 38 minutes on Tuesday. You take a few minutes off both of those lines, and all of a sudden, Wigginton's up to 30 to 32. And I do think a guy like that, that I know he had his struggles early, but he's almost back to 40% from three. He's been pretty good in the last 3 weeks. I just think you have to have him on the court more. Whether he's starting or not, I think we're beyond that point, but he's got to probably play more minutes. I agree.
Alex Halstead is our guest. Alex, I know that you guys had an opportunity to talk to draft guru Mel Kiper on a conference call. I thought I've read the stuff that he said. I think he's spot on with all of them. Brian Peavy, he thinks is going to play and is going to make a team. He's convinced that the 40 time is going to play a huge role in whether Hakeem Butler hears his name on the first day or early in second round or falls to the third round. What do you know? What's Butler been doing? Is that been something that, you know, he's left school and he is or he's training? And how big of an emphasis is his 40 time as he prepares for the combine coming up?
Yeah, he is off training somewhere. I'm not exactly sure where it is. I've seen that he's been in Florida and I think Texas in different areas, but he's off training in advance of the combine, and that is what Mel Kiper Jr. said, is, you know, he's going to be one of the key guys, Kiper said, to run the 40 next week. That teams know that he's this 6'6 guy. They like his frame. They like his body. They want to know how high-end he can be. You know, Kiper thinks he's between the first round and the third round. He said he almost put him in his first-round mock draft this week, which was his 2.0 version. He did it because he wants to see what he runs at the 40. A good 40, supposedly, Kiper thinks he could, you know, at least be in the first-round discussion. An okay 40 maybe puts him in the third round. So that's still a good range to be in, but it's quite a bit of a difference, you know, now for Hakeem. And the one follow-up I would have liked to ask Kiper is, what 40 do teams want to see to make him a first-round pick? And so that's what's going to be interesting. You know, Alan Lazard last year ran a 4.55 40. We thought that was a pretty good time. You know, what do they want to see from Butler? I looked yesterday, and since 2000, there's been 36 receivers of 6'5" or taller that have gone to the combine, and the 20 of those 36 were drafted. The 20 that got drafted averaged a 4.52. The 16 that didn't get drafted ran averaged a 4.62. So there's a difference there, and so I think if he's in the upper 4.5s. I think that probably bodes well for him.
Just think about that. 4.52, you're getting paid. 4.62, I'm a fraction of a second.
Yeah,
crazy.
Too slow,
right?
David Montgomery, never been accused of being too slow, but running backs of the NFL, it's just a different era. What do you hear on him, and give us a range that you'd expect? We talking second, third round, or a guy maybe that could fall just because running backs of the NFL don't have the same value?
Yeah, Kiper needs a second to third round grade. He said he's graded as his fifth running back, but has the same grade as his third running back, so he thinks he's anywhere from the second to third. But that is going to be the thing, is you can be a high-end running back and fall anymore in the NFL, unless you're Saquon Barkley. There's just not a whole lot of high first-round draft picks at running back anymore. Your teams have seen that they can take a Matt Forte later or a Kareem Hunt later and be just as good as a bust like Cedric Benson. So, you know, so that I think hurts him a little bit, just his position. Kiper also said he thinks it's a year where teams aren't as in need of running backs early. But I looked in last year, I think 8 running backs were gone by the end of the third round. So I think, you know, if it's something like last year, I think he's still probably in that second to third round range. That's what Kiper thinks. And he's probably the most known in terms of Iowa State's draft guys. You know, Kiper brought up the fact that he had to do a lot of it on his own, that he was only keyed in on. So I think teams know what he can do. And as long as he runs, just tests okay, I think, you know, he's going to fall probably on day 2.
Cedric Benson, I consider you a friend, Alex. Why would you bring that name up on this program?
Yeah, Bears fans. Hey, we got to go, Alex. Great to talk to you. We'll catch up with you next week. Appreciate your contribution.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Good to talk to you. Alex Hall said CycloneAlert.com.
I was in such a great mood. Cedric Benson.
Yeah, that one leaves a mark, doesn't it? Or he could be Philip Lindsay. Don't get drafted or an invite to the combine. Look at the year he had. You're right about running backs. Not the same value, but boy, oh boy, what a player Montgomery was at Iowa State. We'll talk some hockey next with the voice of the Wild, Joe O'Donnell. They play tonight. They play here on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
Streaming live from coast to coast on iHeartRadio, this is 1460 KXNO.
Hi, welcome. Welcome back, Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO. A few minutes late, maybe we can bump the break to closer to the top of the hour, Trent Condon.
We can make that work.
Because Joe O'Donnell, you and I have some business to do. Joe's the voice of the Iowa Wild. You can hear him here or at .com. You can also catch the Wild tonight and tomorrow night. They got a huge concert, even a band that I've heard of. Dropkick Murphys?
I know them.
Well, I knew them because of Peralt. It must be a Boston band, I'm assuming.
Yes, they are.
Joe O'Donnell, the voice of the Wild, joins us. That's tomorrow night. They've got the concert. They also have a game tonight. San Jose is in town. Joe, Trent, and Ken, good to talk to you again. How you been?
Good, fellas. Glad to hear you guys on the air the last few weeks. It's been enjoyable.
Thank you very much, and we're looking forward to talking, spending more time with you on that on those airwaves here as we march toward the playoffs, and that's the key words, Joe. Playoffs are very much on the horizon if the team continues to play where they play the type of hockey that they have been. Nice to see that the playoffs at this point of the year are still something you can shoot for.
Yeah, that's the key, though, is staying with it. Coaches often use that word consistency in any sport. And last year, the Iowa Wild were in a similar spot, feeling good about themselves with about, you know, maybe even less games than this, you know, 17, 15 games to go somewhere in there. And the wheels sort of fell off the proverbial bus. So for Iowa this year, they've been very consistent, just 16 regulation losses, sitting second place in the division, just 4 points out of the top spot with a game in hand. So they put themselves in a good spot, but with the NHL trade deadline looming, as you know, Kenny, that can affect multiple teams' rosters here. Minnesota, the teams Wild are battling with for playoff spots. So certainly a big game tonight against the San Jose Barracuda. They're the Sharks farm team. They're one of the top teams in the Pacific Division. And Iowa won the only other meeting of the season series out in San Jose. And it was a good game. San Jose's they're a quick team. They don't give up a lot defensively. So the Wild are going to have to really earn their offense tonight.
When is the trade deadline?
Monday.
Monday, okay. So we still got a few more days of this. And with it, do you expect a lot more movement, another piece here or there out of the big club, Minnesota, and the Wild? What do you expect kind of going forward?
Yeah, I think Minnesota's not done. They made a trade yesterday sending Charlie Coyle, Weymouth, Massachusetts boy, essentially to his hometown team in the Boston Bruins. They get Ryan Donato back, a young player.
I like him, Joe. I've seen him a couple of times. I was surprised they moved him.
Yeah, and he's only 22. Yeah. It's the last year of his entry-level deal, so Minnesota can kind of control him through restricted free agency in the future if they want, and I'm sure that they would do that. He's a kid that can play center and wing, and he really shined last year. If you remember some of those collegiate kids that played for the Olympics,
yep.
He was one of four college kids to play for Team USA last year in the Olympics. So he's got some big game experience, international experience, and Minnesota picked him up in the Charlie Coyle trade yesterday.
Yeah, one of the kids he played with was Greenway, right?
Yep.
Interesting. So, I mean, we're not in March yet, so the real push, I shouldn't say that. The push is on, but it's not, I think there's still one more level of intensity. Yep. But what are you seeing? Are you seeing it ramp up night in, night out?
Yeah, I think, you know, even if you go back to the last home series, so February 8th and 9th against San Antonio, was a very kind of chippy playoff atmosphere series. Now, some of that had to do with some bad blood from sort of the rivalry that was building in earlier parts of the year between the Wild and the Rampage. But you're starting to see that, you know, we played teams now 6, 8, 10 times.
Right.
The guys are tired of seeing their opponents that they see within the Central Division. So I don't know how much bad blood we'll have this weekend, but certainly this is a test for both teams because, again, San Jose has struggled the last few games compared to the standard they set for themselves earlier in the season. They lost the only other matchup to the Wild this year. Iowa's trying to keep its 6-game point streak intact tonight. Both teams know what's at stake, which is valuable points towards that playoff push.
You guys were on the NHL Network the other, when was it, Sunday?
Sunday, yeah, against the Chicago Wolves. They picked up the Wolves broadcast.
I watched the third period in overtime. At the end of that game, I thought we were going to have a bench-clearing brawl. It got a little nasty.
Yeah, well, the Wolves scored in overtime to win it, and Gustav Borman was the only Wild player back. It was an odd man rush for Chicago, and he got kind of mixed up with one or two of their guys when the Wolves won it, and the game was over. So obviously Chicago's whole team is spilling down on the ice to celebrate. And poor Gustav Borman, the young Swedish defenseman, was about 1-on-10 there in the corner trying to defend himself. And then the Wild players see what's going on. They try and come rushing in, and it had the chance to really boil over. Fortunately for the American Hockey League, it didn't. But you know, again, that's a prime time rivalry mm-hmm. for the Wild, those Chicago Wolves games, and they've got them on the schedule throughout the year. Grand Rapids, Milwaukee, some of the more typical Wild rivals. Plenty of games left against them the rest of the way. But Iowa does have a bunch of these California teams to play, and a lot of the other Central Division teams don't. And so I think that'll be an interesting wrinkle. You know, there won't be any of those 4-point games for the Wild for some of these stretches when they go out to California next week and play the Barracuda tonight, tomorrow. And so it'll be interesting how that will impact the playoff race.
I want to talk about the Minnesota Wild in a minute, but I do want to get this in. Tomorrow, you drop the puck at 6 tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Because of the post-game concert.
Yep.
Tell us about Dropkick Murphys.
Yeah, so tonight's at 7.
Yep.
It's a dollar popcorn night. Tomorrow is 6 o'clock. And then, you know, within 20, 25 minutes max of the game ending, the Dropkick Murphys will take the ice, if you will, take the stage. So, and tickets are very limited. In fact, the 100 level it's jam-packed. So if you are a Dropkick Murphys fan or you want to take in a really cool experience, hockey and essentially a free concert to boot, you know, your game ticket qualifies for your concert ticket. So make sure you get on iowawild.com or, of course, the Wells Fargo Arena box office and scoop up those tickets because they are going quick. But tomorrow night, I'd say by 9 p.m., Dropkick Murphys are on the stage. He'll probably play for an hour or so.
You said to boot. I almost thought it was a boot. Thought some Canadian was starting to shine through there, Joe.
To boot, yeah. Well done, Trent Connor. You know, I want to follow up on Trent's question, Joe. Joe Don, the voice of the Iowa Wild, he talked about, you know, the trade and what's going to happen and how it's going to affect rosters. Nito Niederreiter a couple of weeks ago. Now Charlie Coyle yesterday. There's stall rumors out there. The Wild wake up in last place this morning in the Central Division as the Blues have, I mean, they've won 11 straight. It's unheard of.
Yeah.
And even the Blackhawks, they've pulled themselves right back into this thing. So Minnesota, they've got a lot of teams that they're looking up at, Joe. What do you think? Can they find their way back into this thing? It's not like they're hopelessly out of it. They're only 3 points out of fourth, but, man, it's tightening up.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember going into the All-Star break, Minnesota, I think they'd won 3 or 4 in a row, and it was sort of like the break came at a bad time. Now they've come out of the break, and they have one win in 10 games. They do have 3 of those overtime shootout losses in there, but, you know, 4 points out of 20 is not going to get it done. And so they've seen, you know, St. Louis blow past them. Chicago now has, I think, won 10 or 11 of 12. They just passed them in the standings. They have Arizona nipping at their heels. And I think the message has been to the first-year GM, Paul Fenton, this is coming from Craig Leopold, Minnesota's owner, is if you can make deals to make us better in the future, go for it. Where in the past, Minnesota had always been, we're trying to win the Stanley Cup.
Right. So
this is really the first year, Kenny, we're seeing Minnesota sort of admit this group hasn't gotten it done. Let's try and improve this core group for the future. That means moving some pieces to get younger and to think more about the long-term plan. I think the green light is there for the management to do that. And so the next few days are very interesting as Minnesota has faded out of a playoff spot. They might be more in the selling mode than the buying mode.
Joe, as you probably know, I like to wager just a little bit. I'm not going to ask
you picking his brain?
Yeah,
gambling advice.
That.
Yeah, yeah. But give me a dart. A, the Lightning right now at a place I'm looking.
You can't bet them.
Plus 225.
You can't bet them.
Give me a dark horse, though. Give me somebody deeper on the board. If I'm just looking out there or making a trip out to Vegas, you'd say, throw a couple shekels on them.
That's a great question. I wasn't really prepared for this one. I wouldn't go against, the Tampa Bay Lightning right now. I've been on absolute
roll. Question.
Talked about, you know.
Yep.
But I don't know what the odds of a team like Toronto are. You know, you might want to look at the Maple Leafs. I know there'll be a ton of pressure on them, but they ramped up this offseason getting a guy like Tavares for these big moments.
Mm-hmm.
They're in a playoff spot. If they get any type of goaltending, they're going to be a handful for anybody in the Eastern Conference.
Okay.
Again, I don't know what odds they are. You know, you got Kenny's team, the Winnipeg Jets.
I'm already on them. Ken talked me into it before the year.
It's a bear in the Western Conference. I mean, Calgary's been a bit of a surprise team. They're leading the Pacific Division. Their winners are 3 in a row, so the Flames might have some decent odds.
How about the team, the parent club of San Jose that you're going to see next couple of nights? This Sharks team, they're pretty good.
Yeah, they are good. And you know what? They added Eric Karlsson in the summer. It was the biggest move of the offseason, arguably, outside of Tavares to the Leafs. And I can't wait for the playoffs. I mean, if you guys are bringing up some of these teams, think about some of the matchups you could have in the National Hockey League Stanley Cup playoffs in like the first and second round this year. And there's some newer faces. You know, Calgary hasn't always been in the postseason picture. Las Vegas appears like they're ready for a run again. You're going to get Toronto in there.
The Blues. Look at how the St. Louis Blues are playing, Joe.
You know, and the Carolina Hurricanes are a team that's right on the outside of that doorstep. They're making national headlines with their crazy celebrations after games. But
yeah, how's that going over?
Have you since 2006?
Have you talked to anybody about that? I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No, it's okay.
Because you struck a nerve. I'm old. I heard Don Cherry on Hockey Night in Canada. Yeah, he's older. He got ripped for his take. I think Don Cherry's right. I don't think there's any place for it. I don't like it one little bit. I know that the other team is off the ice. I know that they're doing it for the fans. They've got to try and grow an audience there. Man, it's just different, and maybe that's the future, I guess, for us old boots, but I don't like it.
I don't think it's the future, Kenny, and here's my take on it. And for fans that are curious what we're talking about, just Google Carolina Hurricanes post-game celebration.
Right.
You'll see it. I mean, SportsCenter's been running it, et cetera. But to me, it's sort of foot and mouth from Don Cherry. He's a guy that's made, and this isn't my argument, I've heard others make it. I mean, Don Cherry, for his career post-coaching, has made his mark with being outlandish and wearing the loud suits and Hockey Night in Canada. So who is he to throw stones at a team that's sort of making headways by being outlandish?
Now, I'll say this.
Hockey is a sport, and you know this, that has always policed itself. So if somebody, you know, some opponent is upset, granted they're off the ice or in their locker room while the Hurricanes are going on these 3- and 4-minute celebrations as a group, if they're upset about it, circle the calendar the next time you play the Hurricanes and take it into your own hands. That's what hockey's always been about.
Excellent point. You're right about Don Cherry. He's worn those suits, and I've watched him since he started, and I'm going to miss him when he's gone. Joe O'Donnell, I look forward to catching up with you again tonight, 7 o'clock at the Well. Tomorrow, 6 o'clock, puck drop, drop kick, Murphy's follow. Go to the website for more details. You can go right there, iowawild.com. Thank you, Joe. We'll talk to you a whole bunch in the weeks to come.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Yeah, good to talk to Joe O'Donnell. Voice of the Wild as we pass the puck around. Wade Lookingbill in 15 minutes. Matt Poston's on the Big 12. Trent and I till noon. Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.